Anytime.
Yo, Joe!
He'll fight for freedom wherever there's trouble. G.I. Joe is there.
G.I. Joe, American hero. G.I. Joe is there.
It's G.I. Joe against Cobra the enemy, fighting to save the day. He never gives up, he's always there, fighting for freedom over land and air.
G.I. Joe!
G.I. Joe is the code name for America's daring, highly trained special mission force. Its purpose? To defend human freedom against Cobra, a ruthless terrorist organization determined to rule the world.
He never gives up. He'll stay till the fight's won. G.I. Joe will dare.
G.I. Joe.
Yes, welcome to Comic Culture on 93.3 CFMU McMaster Radio and podcast at comicbookdaily.com. I am Walter Duralia, Overstreet Advisor and Comic Shop Owner.
Comic Shop Owner. Well, I am Chris Owen, non-comic shop owner, but I am the professor of comic history at Hamilton's Mohawk College.
And Mo?
Mo.
Yes, and for the next hour, we are your star-spangled Avengers.
As we punch Nazis through the world of comic books.
Who the heck writes this stuff, Chris?
I have no idea. Right. Some schmo, I'm sure.
You know what? I love that G.I. Joe intro.
Thank you.
I think it was recorded. I wrote it. Yeah, it was recorded at the YMCA, wasn't it?
I think so. Yeah, that's right. Yes. Well, Walt, how are you today?
I'm doing great, Chris. You know, Wednesday brings us together every week? Yes, it is every week. And the new comics hit the stands at your local comic stores
it's
today.
It's true. You know, Walt, I got to say, you know, I'm not trying to say anything, but it looks like you haven't trimmed your goatee in a while. It's looking a little gray. I mean, I'm not trying to say anything. Are you okay? Like,
you know what, Chris? Working with you, this is what happens.
Oh, well, all right. Fair enough.
A lot of stress on the job.
I'm not trying to say anything here. Just saying. That's
all right. All right. Chris, we are going to start the show, as we always do, with New This Week. And I want to announce that New This Week is brought to you by Bone.
By Bone.
Yep. Jeff Smith has the cojones to give a dirty name to a children's comic book. Deal with it.
And for those
pick
of you
up your bone at your local comic book store.
Go and get Bone.
Right.
Not. There's no ED okay. on the end of that.
Chris, let's cut that off.
All right.
All right.
Okay, well, what do we got for new this week?
New this week, Chris, I want to start with Young Justice number one. It's a Johnny DC title written by Art Baldassar and Franco and cover art by Mike Norton.
Yeah, okay, so you know, Young Justice number one. Now, Art Baldassar and Franco have been known for doing the Tiny Teens, the Teen Titans, like sort of kiddie version of the Johnny's DC line for a number of years now, and they've done a fantastic job at it. So you know what? I think this has been a great, great comic.
Yeah, you know what? And it's on the, I guess it's, there's a new TV show on the Cartoon Network, the animated series called Young Justice.
Yeah.
And I know DC's had some good success with their animated series with Batman Beyond
and all that kind of stuff.
Hopefully this carries on the tradition.
Absolutely.
You know, and hopefully it gets the young kids reading.
Yeah, you know what? Art Baldassar and Franco are, you know, I actually know these guys and they're actually friends of mine. I met them, geez, like 15 years ago at cons. And they're really good guys. They're fun guys to be around, and they love what they're doing. They're teachers and they're part time kind of jobs, and they do comics as a full time career. But they love writing kids comics. They're all about family and kids and trying to get kids involved in comics and drawing and art and that kind of thing. And they're really good guys.
All right. So this is a call out to all the patrons of comic book stores today and during the week. Pick up a Young Justice number one, not for yourself, but for a nephew, a son, a niece, a friend's kid, and get the kids involved in comics.
You know what? I remember I was at a Detroit Comic Con. You know, you and I have been to the Motor City Con a few times, and I was at a Motor City Con once, and Art was there. But this is one of the few cons that Adam West happened to be there, and he was signing autographs. And
Adam West, the old Batman from the '60s TV series.
That's right. Yep. And you know, it got to a point where Adam West was sort of like, as people were coming up with things to get signed, he would kind of look at the item and he would say, oh, you know what? This is a vintage Batman Mego figurine worth $80 in the package. You know what? I'm going to sign it and it's going to end up being worth $200. So you know what? I'm going to charge you $40. Right? So,
nice. You know, Very nice.
So he would kind of like judge based on what the value of things were worth and how much he would charge you.
Right.
So Art Balthazar, I remember one time he painted this drawing, I guess he painted this painting, I should say, of the original sort of lineup of Batman TV show heroes. So it had like Batman, Robin, Batgirl, and you know, all kind, you know, in this sort of oil painting,
right?
And he asked Adam West to sign it, and he said, "Oh, geez, this is really good. This is going to be worth a lot of money. I'm going to have to charge you a lot for this." And he said, "Oh, actually, you know what? This is for my son. I painted this for my son. It's you know, I'm not going to resell it. It's got my name on it, but it's for my kids." And so Adam West said, "You know what? I'll sign it for free." You know,
oh, very nice. Yeah, good, you know, on Adam. I was about to diss Adam West, you know, but what? Now I'm not.
But you know what? Yeah, and that's the kind of thing. Like he realized that this was sort of a labor of love for art at the time, and he really liked it.
You know, the interesting part of that story, I know the guy that bought that on eBay.
That's so not true. So not true. Anyways, what else we got for new this week?
All right. Amazing Spider-Man number 654.1.
Point one.
Now,
this is all part of the Point One series that's coming out from Marvel.
Yes, the Initiative. They call it.
Okay.
Where they're, I guess they're taking guys like Iron Man and Avengers, and they're doing Point One stories, which means, to retailers, I guess, is you can push this on new comic readers. They're jumping on points.
Right. And not only jumping on points, they're comics that are sort of usually stories that are told in one issue. So you can buy the issue, you can read it, and there's no long continuing stories.
Instant gratification.
Exactly. Right. And you know what? I've long been a fan of these kind of stories, and because you know what, this is what a lot of the 70s comics were made of, and which is really what grew the comic book industry, right? So I was always a big fan of these kind of stories where, you know what, you pick up a comic, you read it, you're done with it, you don't necessarily have to buy the next story because it doesn't necessarily tie into everything.
Well, I think Marvel's identifying that to attract new readers, these daunting, these challenging, huge arcs and events, yeah, and stuff like that are a little bit too much for say, the new guys. So this Point One initiative, I think, is aimed at trying to get new readers in. And their plan, too, is for once these things come out, it won't be a full month before the second part of, like, the next story comes out. I think they're trying to do within 2 weeks, I believe. So, you know, that new guy will have something quick to read.
Right.
Oh, man, this was great. I had fun. Yeah, you know, and 2 weeks later, there's another one.
Yeah,
so
it's perfect.
It is a conscientious move on Marvel to attract new readers.
Which I think is great because, you know what, I've long said that I'm not a fan of the sweeping story arcs that I know for the comic shop retailer like yourself, they do help things sell comics, like they help the industry move. However, you know, to get new people involved, it's really hard. You know, as a reader, you don't want to go all of a sudden say, well, I don't know what's going on. This is issue 600. It's part four of an 8-issue storyline. I don't know what the heck's going on. You know what? Forget it. I'm not going to buy it.
Right. But the interesting thing is for publishers now. See, publishers, like Marvel's like the biggest. Okay, hit them in DC, right? But you can see Marvel's approach here. Marvel is now tackling NDC as well. They're trying to win the war or wage the war on six different fronts. So they're doing their Fear Itself.
Yeah.
You know, they're appeasing the big story arc fanboys. They're doing the Point One to try to get the new guys.
They're doing their kids.
They're doing their, you know, Johnny DC,
yeah,
whatever, to get the little kids. There's a lot going on these publishers. Yeah. They're, you know, they have that team up there that are going, okay, you know what? We got to get the children involved. This is our endeavor. We have to get, you know, new people reading. This is an endeavor. We have to appease the fanboys. This is our endeavor.
Okay,
right?
So, you know, I'm going to pose this question to you.
Pose it.
In the 70s, they didn't have these different fronts, right? In the 70s, they had...
Yo, you're fronting.
In the 70s, they had all these different, you know, the storylines. But, I mean, they had, like, the one-off stories, And somehow they still sold thousands of copies of these stories because they had good art and good stories that were told on a regular basis. And yet somehow these industries survived. So do we really need to have these broad sweeping storylines that go on for 8, 10, 12, 15 months?
You know what, though, Chris? It's just the nature of the times. Everything is fragmented. Like, music is fragmented. You know, there's niches?
Niches, sure, yeah.
Yeah. There's just, you know, they have to kind of – and the thing is, by going into these little niches,
yep,
they're going to be happy with, you know, 8,000 or 12,000 sales,
right?
Or as opposed to in the old days, you know, if it's not printing 200,000 copies,
it wasn't worthwhile.
Why even do it? Sure. So, and I think it's part of farming. I think comics are used to farm future endeavors, right?
Right.
So,
oh, absolutely, yeah, for sure. I mean, I've long said that there was a long time rumor going around with DC because Warner Brothers owned the DC imprint, that Warner Brothers used DC Comics as sort of their R&D subsidiary in order to create new movies and things like that and TV shows.
Right. I love the way you said subsidiary.
Yeah, you like that? Yeah.
All right. Chris.
You know, it was Valentine's Day yesterday. You can't try to ask me out now.
The Mighty Samson number 2 from Dark Horse Comics.
Yes.
Is hitting the stands today at your local comic book store. I don't know how I missed the Mighty Samson number 1.
You know what? Somehow we missed the first one. I don't know how.
But number 2, and this is Dark Horse. I like kind of Dark Horse going back to those 60s Gold Key characters.
Yes.
And I think they did Magnus and the
Robo-Fighter. Dr. Solar.
Yeah. Now Mighty Samson.
Turok, Son of Stone.
Turok. This is cool. I like it going back. And you know, Mighty Samson was a great — I remember reading some old Mighty Samson, and like the Gold Key stories were good reads.
I agree, they were fun.
And they're, you know, like you said, self-contained in the old days. But I don't know, I mean, the Dark Horse is going to the well with you know, I would say a C-list.
But still, you know what? I hear what you're saying on this, but you know what? Mighty Samson is – it is being written by Jim Shooter, who was instrumental in a lot of the DC and Marvel storylines. And not only that, he was also the editor-in-chief for the Valiant comic book publisher
for
a number of years.
Publisher,
although it didn't last, its first couple of years did extremely well. Extremely, extremely well. So you know what? You got to give him credit for what it's due. And also, Jim Shooter, you know what? He was one of the youngest storytellers ever to be part of the comic industry. I think he was 16 when he first started writing for Legion of Superheroes.
Wow.
So you know what? Like, the guy's been around for a long time, and he knows what he's doing. And Pat Olaf, who did Spider-Man for a long time, he's also a very good guy, by the way, a very nice guy. He's the one drawing this Mighty Samson comic. So you know, you got two really great creators on this title. So I can't say anything bad about it, because you got really great people involved in it.
All right, excellent. All right, Chris, we're going to stop. We got a full show today, so we're going to stop new this week. And as always, I think you have some sort of musical segue right after industry news.
Absolutely, I do. You know what? I was just not too sure exactly what I was going to go with this time, but you know, I figured I might go with something a little different, like the Ramones. Look out! Look out!
Yes, the Ramones. I love it, Chris. I love that song.
Well, you know, it is the Ramones, and it was a great tribute to the old 1960s Krantz animated Spider-Man TV series. And, you know, of course, this is a great segue into our next section, Industry News, which is Industry News is brought to you by Booster Gold. Sell your watches, jewelry, and unused gold to Booster Gold. He gives you top money, and for your unwanted gold, shop at Booster Gold.
That was terrible.
Come on now. It was great.
Okay, yes, Booster Gold. If you have gold, you take it to Booster Gold. Chris, as you said, a great segue into Industry News. And I wanted to start Industry News with an email we got from...
We got an email?
Yeah, we get lots of emails. That's true, actually. We do, yeah. But we got an email, I would say, from an irate listener.
I know where this is going now.
And it's from Kevin Boyd, the very illustrious and esteemed Grand Poobah of the Schusters, I believe, or something like that, high up in the Schuster Awards.
Yes, you know what? Okay, well, you know, I am actually – I know we are – you know, we do report on comics every week, and we should know – we should be up on what's going on. But I am especially horrified by myself because I was not aware of the delineations between some categories here. And being a part of the Schuster Awards, you know, Walt, I'll just leave it up to you.
All right. The subject of the email. Oh, my God. Podcast. And then the body of the email reads, "You guys are killing me. For the Schusters, a cartoonist writes and draws their own stories. They do it all. And an artist is someone who draws the comics based on a writer's script." Yeah. I think we...
Was my fault last week.
Though, I think we were close in our... Didn't we say that?
No, not really.
All right.
No, you know what? That was my fault last week. You know, I was a little out of it last week. I had some personal issues, and I wasn't really all there in my head.
Right.
So, you know what? I have to apologize to Kevin...
And all of
our listeners and the Schusters. I should have said that cartoonists are sort of the all embodiment of writer, artist, all that kind of thing, all in one. Whereas we were talking about earlier about you know, the comic book illustrator, comic book artist, maybe just writes somebody else's stories and that kind of thing.
Right. So our deep apologies to Kevin and all our fans.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
All right, Chris. Industry news about The Dark Knight Rises, the new Batman movie.
The new movie.
I'm hearing Tom Hardy is cast as Bane.
That's right. Yes, Tom Hardy is going to be Bane, and of course this is the newest movie by Christopher Nolan, who already directed the original Batman Begins and Batman the Dark Knight, and this is going to be the next segment of the Batman franchise. And not only is Tom Hardy going to be Bane, but I believe you have the name of the person playing Catwoman.
Anne Hathaway,
in fact, is correct. Anne Hathaway, who has also been known for her work in movies like The Princess Diaries or The Devil Wears Prada. You know, and she's actually also hosting the Oscars this year.
Anne Hathaway.
Anne Hathaway. So you know what? She's got a lot on her plate, and she's a very accomplished actress. I think that she's going to be great as Catwoman. Now, excellent. She's no Julie Newmar, Eartha Kitt, Lee Merriweather, or even Michelle Pfeiffer. However, maybe she'll bring something new to the character.
Right. But you know what? I mean, every person you name there that's played the Catwoman is an illustrious and well-renowned actress.
That's right.
And I'm sure Anne Hathaway will add. And it's interesting because each one was very different from the other.
For sure.
So it's very fitting that they didn't try to cast somebody similar to,
you know,
Michelle Pfeiffer or whoever, right?
Yeah.
And which is good. So I mean, I'm looking forward to the new Batman movie. The Batman The Batman. I know what you're going to say. Batman is one of those franchises that I actually watch the movies because I enjoy them.
No, I was not going to say the fact that
I don't watch movies.
You don't watch anything.
Right.
I was going to say you're just looking forward to seeing Anne Hathaway in a Catwoman outfit.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I figured. Yeah.
All right, Chris.
Meow.
Comics Pro, Chris, is an organization in the U.S. that all the store owners, it's like a union of some sort, like a buying group.
Okay.
So it's an organization. It's like a commerce, I don't know what the hell I'm saying, but it's kind of like a co-op. And together they
organization, a buying group.
An organization that they get together. It's the same business, so it's their commerce.
Okay, you know, sure.
Like Chamber of Commerce, whatever. Okay. And they had their big annual meeting in Dallas about issues, I guess. And what was cool, I thought, is the Comics Pro Awards.
Yeah.
So all these store owners, awards.
So this collective organization full of stores.
Of independent comic book stores. The things you and I support. Well, and okay. Champion here on the show.
Okay, well, I don't want to say anything bad about these guys, but aren't most comic book stores independent? I mean, there's not a whole lot of conglomerate comic book store chains out there.
No, you're right. They are independent, but by choice, they can join the Comics Pro organization.
I see.
And to join it, you have to pay your dues, anything else. And so they have a voice. They have a common voice.
I was going
to
say, it's not like they're part of union.
No. And they have the Comics Pro Awards, which is cool, I thought. And Stan Lee and Jack Kirby are the recipients of this year's Industry Appreciation Award. An Industry Appreciation Memorial Award to Jack Kirby.
Right? Okay.
So when I read this, I found it funny because Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, I mean, we owe everything, not everything, but we owe so much to them. And it's like every single organization, like, you know, Comics Pro is now giving them an award and they're announcing annual awards. And I got this idea that, you know, maybe you and I should start awards.
Sure, absolutely. You know,
like if Comics Pro can do awards, Comics Culture can do awards.
I think we should. I think we should give a Comics Culture Award every year to people of the most illustrious importance in the comic book industry.
We should. When are we going to start this? This is groundbreaking.
It is. And maybe we should start it, say, in the summertime.
Right.
You know,
right.
Or maybe the beginning of the school year.
And I think, this is what I think. I think we should give the award, once we send out all the emails, to the guys that say they'll actually be on the show.
That's an excellent idea. So, you know what? Let's draw them in and, hook, line, and sinker kind of thing.
Oh, hey, you did work on in 83?
Yeah.
If you're on our show, you win our annual award.
But, okay, you know, I'm not trying to put down this Comics Pro
award.
But, I mean, okay. First of all, to celebrate Stan Lee, who hasn't celebrated Stan Lee?
Right.
Second of all, to celebrate Jack Kirby. Aren't you about, 10, 15 years too late? Like, I mean, the guy's been dead since, 1993 or 94.
But they're trying to add some legitimacy to their organization.
And by giving an award to some posthumously to some guy that happened to create, everything in the world?
I guess. I mean, I don't know. It's a publicity stunt. I mean, we're dumb enough to cover it here. So,
that's a good point.
It's obviously working for them.
That's
right?
A very good point. Yeah, okay. I agree. Yeah.
All right. So, congratulations, Stan and Jack.
Stan, I congratulate you on your most recent award.
Right. Hey, speaking of Stan.
Yes.
Spider-Man. Marvel has announced that Spider-Man is getting its own 3-issue miniseries tied into the Fear Itself event.
Oh, very cool. Right. Okay, yeah.
So when I read this, I'm going, Marvel is smart, because no matter what event Marvel is running, it should have a Spider-Man miniseries attached
to it.
Absolutely,
of course. Yeah, right? It always has to, right? I mean, Spider-Man is really the flagship character of the Marvel Universe. Still, after 30, 40 years, right? So it's, you have to always include Spider-Man in something.
You have a Civil War, it has to be a Spider-Man miniseries. Yeah. You can have a cosmic Marvel that has nothing to do with Spider-Man.
For sure.
And give it a Spider-Man miniseries.
Wait, okay.
Have him up in space somehow by accident.
Point in fact here, let's not forget, so Secret Wars back in the 1980s,
right?
You know, when the original
when the original
Secret Wars happened, it's a cosmic kind of event that really should have nothing major happen to Spider-Man.
Right.
That is, of course, when he got the black costume.
Right.
And it became a giant Spider-Man event.
Yes, you're right. You're right.
Marvel always seems to try to involve Spider-Man at the highest level of all their events.
The only comic book, as an old comic book pricing guy,
yeah.
The only comic book that's worth any money in that 12-issue
miniseries
was number 8,
yeah.
where he gets the costume.
Right.
You know, number 1 to 7 and 9 to 12, you know, are in quarter bins.
Yeah.
But number 8 can sell for $20,
$30. Sure,
right?
Sure.
So you're right. You're right.
Of course I'm right. I am the comic historian, right?
Chris, let's go on. I want to talk about Walmart. It's very exciting news that Walmart is getting the exclusive Justin Bieber comic book.
Well, you know, I mean, life just really isn't worth living without the
Justice League comic book.
Justin Bieber comic book.
Justin Bieber comic book. It's a 40-page exclusive edition carried by Walmart. But listen,
40 pages.
Listen, 40 pages.
40 pages. Justin.
No, you see.
The guy's like 12 years old.
You're falling into the trap.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're grizzled old comic book guys. You know, comic book stores are little independent businesses.
Yeah.
And the ordering is decided by these comic book guys.
Okay,
comic
fair enough. Yeah.
So my point is the couple thousand independent comic book stores in North America, very few of them are going to order this Justin Bieber comic book, right? But it's a mistake
on my part. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because the problem here is that grandma's dressed in spandex buying bulk Cheese Whiz.
Ugh.
Don't come into your local comic book store. They go into Walmart.
I don't know what you just said, but it sounds terrible.
Right.
Grandma's dressed in spandex buying Cheese Whiz.
Right. But
I think you just started a whole new line of comics right there. You know what? I would love to read a comic book about that.
No, but listen, my point though is there is a huge market for Justin Bieber comic book.
Is, yes.
And it is a market of these moms going in.
For sure. My
God, my 9-year-old daughter will love this and I will pick it up.
Yep.
Right? And Walmart is smarter than comic book stores because they know this.
They're going to sell.
Right?
Yes.
And what comic book stores have as a disadvantage is they don't get this clientele into their shop.
You're right.
And so, you know, they're going, oh, man, this is crap. You know, the same reaction you had. And I'm not going to order any of this crap. Right?
Right.
And they will not reap the financial benefits of a kid that you know, little girls swoon over.
You're right.
And that
you're right.
Their moms will buy at the checkout of Walmart.
You're right.
Walmart
you're
will make money on this.
Yes, you're absolutely right. I mean, this is something very similar to the Spider-Man Obama issue, but it's also something very similar to years ago, it was probably before your time. Years ago, they had some comics out there called Rock and Roll Comics, and they had Guns N' Roses and Def Leppard and AC/DC comics. And you know what? Comic book stores at the very beginning didn't buy them because they figured the same thing. Who the heck in the world is going to want to buy these things? And of course, at the time, I remember Guns N' Roses went up for from like $1 to like $10
right away,
which is, that's 1,000% increase in profits, right? So you know what? Why wouldn't you want to buy something like that? And so, you know what? I can see how these kind of things would be popular to the mainstream audience that the comic book store doesn't necessarily pander to.
Right. And this is a good thing, though. This is a good thing. I love Walmart for doing this. And I love, you know, thousands upon thousands. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they may sell more than the latest issue of Amazing Spider-Man.
Sure they will. Sakes. Absolutely.
And Blue Water, who is the publisher, has a great... The thing is with Walmart, that they're probably selling them at below cost or something
or
like that.
Or below cost.
Below cost. But, no, this is good. This is good. This is getting the sequential art, the comic book, out into... And again, I don't want to hit the point that I've already hit, but I will, is comic book stores are at a disadvantage because it is a comic book product that they can't sell because that type of clientele that would be most likely to buy this isn't coming into their store.
You know what? This is a perfect example of the Archie scenario.
Right.
The comic book stores traditionally
can't sell Archies.
Right. However, they sell wonderfully at supermarkets,
right?
Because the clientele that buys Archie goes to supermarkets. They don't go to comic book stores.
Perfect analogy.
That's what I'm here for. I'm a comic historian right here.
We're going to move on to Red Sonja news.
Right. Red Sonja.
Remember Brigitte Nielsen in the old 80s, Red Sonja?
Of course.
And apparently Red Sonja now is the movie is being, I guess, fast-tracked into production.
But Brigitte Nielsen's not going to be
Is not going to be. It's going to be some girl. I don't know who she is. I know who she is. I know her name. But
what's her
Amber
name?
Heard.
Amber Heard.
Yeah.
Our
engineer James is.
I think he's drooling a little bit.
No, he's basically saying she's a great actress. Yes.
And, although in case there's a short out on the board of the electronics here. It's because a little bit too much drool.
It's going to be directed by Simon West, who just directed The Mechanic, which I think is a remake of the old Charles Bronson movie.
I think you're right. That's the one with what's his name? Jason Statham.
Nathan. Yeah. Right. And
Nathan. That's it. Nathan.
Nathan.
Nathan Statham.
My son's name is Nathan. And he really loves comic books.
Jason Statham.
Statham. Right.
He was also in The Transporter.
And he was in that Stallone movie, The Expendables.
Yes, he was. You're right.
I know who he is. Yeah, right.
Okay. I'm sure. But you didn't see him. Hold on. You didn't actually see a movie, did you?
I never seen The Expendables, but I read about it.
Story of my life right there, everybody.
What's cool is that, well, not cool, I guess, but the whole production is hanging on the success of the new Conan movie.
Right.
So if the new Conan movie does well, they figure the genre, you know, the Robert E. Howard, the sword and sorcery stuff is being accepted by the audience. So they're kind of waiting. The new Conan is in post-production now, and I guess they're waiting for the results of the Conan movie.
Okay, I know you're a Conan fan.
Yes.
So does it...
By Crom.
Do you really think that no matter who it is as the Conan role, are they going to be able to pull it off?
I hope so. I think so. I want to say that the character is bigger than the actor, but man, you know, Arnold is Arnold, right?
Yeah.
But what I will say is this, is that Arnold should get a cameo in the new Red Sonja movie.
I agree, yeah, you know, for sure.
And I think that will equal success.
Well, he's no longer the governator, right?
Like, no.
I mean, his term is coming up or has come up.
It's done. He's out, right.
So you know what? Like, he's going to have to find something to do now. I think he's going to go back to doing movies from what I've heard.
Right, but he cannot be, you know, the big guy. He has to be the king or the old whatever.
The old grizzled Conan type character,
right.
Yeah.
I love the sword and sorcery genre. I'm really, really banking on Conan succeeding.
Now, is this a movie you might actually watch?
Oh, yeah. The Conan movie I will watch.
Wow. Okay.
At the movie theater. And then
really?
The Red Sonja.
You'll actually go to the theater?
Oh, yeah. For the Conan. But the Red Sonja I might rent.
Wow. Okay.
Or, how do you call it now? Download?
Whatever. Download, rent.
Right.
Yeah.
I might do that. All right, Chris, let's move on. I want to talk about the Amazing Spider-Man play.
Oh, the musical.
What's it called again? Turn Off the Dark.
Turn Off the Dark. And from what I'm hearing, people are saying, please keep the dark on because it's pretty terrible.
Yeah, it's getting panned heavily by the critics.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find my notes here. It says, it's a shrill and insipid mess, the Washington Post. And the New York Times calls it ranks among the worst
musicals of all time. Now, is this not the musical that did this not cost the investors something like $52 million or something?
I think the total figure was $700 billion.
Oh, yeah. But you know, it's just...
You're right.
It's whatever it was, it's too much. I think they were expecting a lot of high dramatic, high wires, acrobatics.
Well, it has all that, and it has music by Bono and The Edge from U2.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing is that it's still selling out.
Well, you know, it probably will for a long time because it's Spider-Man, right?
Spider-Man.
Spider-Man, a hero again.
No, but it's still selling. It hasn't even officially opened yet. So it's in that kind of pre-production where audiences are invited to pay, and they're paying full price.
Right.
But while they work out the kinks of the production.
Sure.
Right.
Now, do you think that this is going to have the legs to last for 10, 15 years?
Well, Chris, here's the thing.
Here's the thing.
Okay, so you and I—it's a pop culture world out there. This is my take. This is my take right here, and only mine. But it's a pop culture world out there, and New York City is one of the most visited cities in the world.
Right.
I think billions of people go there every year.
I don't know. there might be a billion. I don't know about billions.
And,
I mean, there's only like 7 billion.
And the thing
is
when you and I go there.
Yeah.
And we're looking for hot spots and things to do.
Because, right? You know, because as comic nerds, the first thing you're going
to
think
of is who the hell wouldn't want to go see the Spider-Man
movie?
You're right. Right?
Yeah.
So they have a captive audience. They have an audience. They have a pop culture world audience. New York is a mecca of tourists from all over the world. They will draw people to see this.
You know what? You're right.
Yeah.
I mean, all I can say is the last time you and I were in New York together, we got caught on some counterfeit hockey tickets.
I love that. Remember that?
Yeah. All too well, I remember that.
But I guess, okay, so here's a distinction between, you know, high drama, some sort of, I'll say Shakespearean drama or something like that, where it's really heavy and thick and laden with meaning and,
right.
and insight.
And, nobody wants that.
No. You know, you get your university professors and their wives going to this thing.
With tweed jackets with leather on the patches.
Exactly. Yeah. And the New York Times critics are raving about it.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Right? And then you and I go.
Oh, my God.
And we're scratching our head. What the heck just going on here? I don't understand. Right, but then we go to like Spider-Man, and we see some guy stuck in a trapeze, and you know, and it's fun.
And now all of a sudden, it makes sense to us because we're simple-minded folk.
Right, I guess.
Yeah.
I guess. But you know what? I think the production needs Stan Lee.
Well, you know what? Every production needs Stan Lee.
If they can get Stan, imagine Stan in a trapeze.
I would love to see that.
And that's what that I think they're on their way to success anyway, but I think that would top it all off.
You're absolutely correct, you know, and I think that the Spider-Man musical could probably be good for somebody out there. I don't know. You know what? I'm just not really too sure if I'm the guy that needs to go see it. I really don't know what to say about that, other than, you know what, maybe, you know who might have the answer to that?
Who?
Maybe the Green Hornet.
Another challenge for the Green Hornet. His aide, Kato.
Hold on, technical difficulties there. Hold on a second here. Wait, well, let's just start that again here.
His aide, Kato. I don't know.
Another challenge for the Green Hornet. His aide, Kato, and their rolling arsenal, the Black Beauty. On police records, a wanted criminal, the Green Hornet is really Britt Reed, owner-publisher of the Daily Sentinel. His dual identity known only to his secretary and to the district attorney. And now, to protect the rights and lives of decent citizens, rides the Green Hornet.
Yes, and I think, I'm not sure, but I think that was the flight of the bumblebee kind of thing going on in the background there. And I absolutely love how his secretary knows. So what else does his secretary know is what I want to ask. All right, next thing I want to go into is in industry news is the Spider-Man joining the Fantastic Four.
Well, you know, sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, but it's not the Fantastic Four. It's the Future Foundation.
Right. And you know what? They have new costumes now. And speaking of which, have you had a chance to see the new Spider-Man costume? The all white, and it's sort of like almost like a reverse negative version of the
Bizarro Spider-Man.
Well, it's like the black costume, but like in reverse.
Reverse, yeah. I like it. Yeah.
It's very strange.
I mean, I like it in the sense that it's terrible.
I think it's terrible, but you know what? It is a change. And, you know, of course it's never going to last. I mean, you know what? Superman died. He came back to life. Batman had his back broken. He came back to, you know, these things don't never last for forever. But, you know, I think it's very interesting that they're going to make Spider-Man part of the Fantastic Four.
I love how they play on the FF, right? Future Foundation.
Yes, yes.
I prefer the FF to be stand for... Fans effed.
Fans effed. That's right.
Yeah, that's
yes.
FF, which I think is fans effed. Because here is, you know, the team of teams, the Nexus of Marvel. The
Nexus, yes.
Yes, where Marvel started. And you get rid of Johnny Storm and, you know what, let's take, you know, the most popular superhero in the Marvel universe
yeah.
and throw him on the team to help
yeah.
sales, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, but, you know, this, and let's not forget, this is nothing new. Back in the late 80s, early 90s, I believe it was, the Fantastic Four was actually replaced in its entirety by, you know, so no longer did we have Mr. Fantastic, Sue Storm, Johnny Storm, and The Thing. We had the Incredible Hulk, Ghost Rider, Wolverine, and Spider-Man. So this was a two-issue miniseries sort of, you know, deal, a replacement series that occurred for...
two issues?
For two issues, yes. I guess I reiterated myself there. Right. But anyways, it was done before. So
right.
And
right.
So Spider-Man being part of the Fantastic Four really isn't anything new.
I guess. I mean, it's one of those things, I think, where... I think I might have used the Stones as an analogy. I'm probably a Stones fan, obviously, but the Fantastic Four was a team that was greater than the sum of its parts.
Absolutely, yeah, right? Absolutely. However, I'm just gonna challenge you on that for a brief moment here, because you know what, the Thing, the character of the Thing, had his own own series for a long time there, and it lasted for quite a few issues. So you know what?
Mick had his own albums too, pal, but you know what? Nobody reads them anymore. They're listening to the old tracks, and we're reading the old FF stories,
right? Fair enough,
right? And that's my point. Everybody harks back to the old classic FF stories. It's that team, right?
And
it's just, I mean, I don't know. I mean, obviously, this is a stopgap measure on Marvel's part, and I honestly hope that Storm makes it back to the FF.
I hope so too. And of course he will, because it's comic books and everybody always comes back to, you know,
where they belong.
Right. That's right. Yes.
All right, guys. Chris, now you're a big gamer, right?
Geek, yeah, okay.
You love the gaming.
I do. I don't do a whole lot of gaming, but when I have enough some time, I like to try to just sort of relax a little bit and do some gaming. Yes.
Okay, well, I'm reading about this Arkham Asylum and Gotham thing happening where they're actually producing a comic book to explain to the gamers
right.
what happens between, the switch of venue in the games.
Yeah, okay. So,
can you explain that to me?
Yeah, absolutely. So, okay, there was in the past year or so, or a couple years, I guess now, they had a DC Batman Arkham Asylum game. So Batman had to go into Arkham Asylum and sort of, free people. And, you know, Arkham Asylum was being run by the Joker. And it was sort of like this really cool take on, you know, seeing all these different kind of weird inmates and things like that. And you had to sort of beat up everybody. And now there's a sequel to the video game, and it's Batman Arkham City, Gotham City kind of thing, where they're going to go, and now the Joker has sort of taken over the Gotham City, and he's sort of made Arkham Asylum into an entire city.
Right.
So now what we're having here is we've got a comic book that's going to connect the two video games from the original Arkham Asylum to the next Arkham City. Or Gotham. I don't. Do we have the exact title? I'm sorry. I don't.
You know what? I don't know. It's called.
It is Arkham City.
Arkham City. Batman Arkham City.
Yeah. So I thought I was right the first time. Yeah. So it is Arkham City, And so we have this comic that's going to sort of bridge the gap between Batman Arkham Asylum to Batman Arkham City, and we're going to find out exactly how did this happen? How did the Joker take over the rest of the city? What's going on here?
Yeah, I love it. I mean, it's a six-parter. It's going to be released digitally and, you know, in regular comic book form for $2.99, and it starts in May. And here's what I want to ask you. I don't know the numbers. I haven't researched this, but I would imagine that there are more gamers out there than comic book readers.
I would say absolutely, definitely there is more.
So is this a good thing by DC to try to do this?
For
because
sure,
it's going
sure.
to make gamers read a comic book.
You know what? Playing the Batman Arkham Asylum game was absolutely fantastic. It was one of the best games I had ever played.
Right.
I thought the redesign of the characters was great. The feel of the game was great. The play of the game was great. And you know, I thought it probably would introduce a lot of gamers into the comic book industry.
Mm-hmm.
Now, having said that, I think the reverse is going to happen with the miniseries that's going to connect the two games. People will probably buy the comic book and think to themselves, well, "What's this game all about? Like, I'm not a gamer. Now I want to be involved in gaming."
So there'll be an ebb and flow both ways.
You'll
see a little bit of comic book guys picking this up and go, "Oh, you know, I'm gonna check this game out." And then you'll see the comic book guys saying, "Hey, oh, you mean I have to read this to kind of understand Arkham City better?" Well, and then they'll actually download or buy the comic book, right?
You know, what's really interesting about all these online games and stuff like that DC does, they're incredibly smart at what they're doing here because, you know, they have over the years, you know, geez, like 20 years ago, they started doing like the Batman animated series, and they've had a number of different cartoons and games, things like that. But what they're very smart about doing is they keep on having the same voice actors, they keep on having the same people acting out in the cartoons and in the games. So people are getting connected with the games and with the cartoons, so it's always the same people. So they become very familiar. Like, for example, Mark Hamill played the voice of the Joker in the Batman animated series.
Okay.
And he continued to do that throughout the animated series for the video game, the Arkham Asylum video game, and even now in the DC Online video game, he still continues to be the voice of the Joker. So, you know, there's a continuity there that people and gamers really love.
Right.
Right? So because they realize that these character actors are continuing with the stories as if it's always the same person, right?
Right.
Which makes it very cool.
Which makes it authentic, which makes it cool.
Yes, excellent. Absolutely.
All right. Thanks, Chris. Switching over to Marvel. Marvel versus Capcom 3.
Yes.
Okay, you know, they've confirmed Galactus is the final boss.
Yeah, you know, this is very cool because, you know, they had the Marvel versus Capcom game before, and Galactus was the boss before, and you'd always see these sort of 2D animation sort of come down with the giant fists and things like that, and it was very cool. And so it's sort of neat to come back, and it's sort of a bit of a tradition to have these giant, this sort of larger than life character come down and be the final boss of the Marvel versus Capcom game.
So if you're playing the game, I guess the final boss means that this is the last guy you fight, right?
Yeah, you know what? They're called fighting games, so the whole idea behind the game is you pick a character and you go up and you spar against another character.
Right.
And the idea is you beat that character and then you have to go to the next character who's supposedly a little bit more difficult, and it kind of graduates yourself up until the very last person who's supposed to be really, really difficult to beat. And in this case, it's going to be Galactus, who is, of course, the world devourer, right?
Right.
You know,
right.
So it's very cool that he's like the – because he's really the ultimate guy to beat, really. I mean, nobody can beat Galactus. Who else can eat a planet? And so the idea is that, man, if you can beat this guy, you're really good at this game.
Right. Excellent. All right. Well, hey, I think – it releases yesterday, right? The 15th of February.
That's right. Yesterday. That's right.
All right. We have a name for the new Spider-Man movie, guys. By the way, it is The Amazing Spider-Man.
Whoa. Slow down there, Brainiac. Okay, hold on. The new Spider-Man movie is called The Amazing
Spider-Man?
Mark Webb's
Amazing Spider-Man movie is called The Amazing Spider-Man.
How long did it take them for them to pick up that title?
I don't know, but I like it. I mean, it's a homage to the old Amazing Spider-Man comic book title
that is the flagship
title of Marvel still, and it always has been. I mean, whether they're the Amazing Spider-Man sales don't necessarily have to be the top in the Marvel Universe, but the title is always considered the flagship of the Marvel Universe, the Amazing Spider-Man.
Absolutely.
And I think they went with that title because of what it means in the pantheon, in the legend of Spider-Man.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, like you had Amazing Fantasy 15 was the first appearance of Spider-Man, and then you had Amazing Spider-Man appear in his own title in number one.
Yep.
So really, it was the flagship title for the Spider-Man comic.
I think it's the flagship title for Marvel, and I think it's a good title for the movie.
For sure. I agree. I totally agree. Yeah, I totally agree.
And it will be shot in 3D. And what I like is it is it's going back to Parker in his teenage years, and I have a good feeling about this. What Marvel needs is for this to succeed, Chris, and it will how can I say this? It will set up future movies, because I think that the last sequence of Spidey movies has run its course. They need this to succeed to start a new one.
Yeah, you know what? The last one was by Sam Raimi was really great. I mean, the third one I think could have used a little bit of work, but you know, it's done, and let's have a relaunch. Let's get it going again, because this is really a character that has a lot of legs to it, and it can do really well. So having said that, you know what? We're going to have a quick musical interlude here, and of course, what better musical interlude than Space Ghost?
Yes, Space Ghost, and we continue our comic industry news
journey,
and we have to announce that we have a new sponsor contributing to the industry news, and that is this segment is brought to you by the Mylar bag, still a cheap and effective way to make your subpar comics look mint.
You know what? That is a absolutely wonderful sponsor to have. I mean, really, what better sponsor could you have than somebody that's wants you to keep everything mint?
Right. Or somebody that will take things that aren't mint and make them look mint.
Absolutely.
Well, yes. I mean, I've used the Mylar. I swear by Mylar.
I'm sure you do.
Right.
I'm sure. But you know what? As a comic book retailer, I'm sure you've used Mylars before in order to try to make books look a little bit better than they really are.
It's like an enhancement process,
yes.
Chris.
Yes.
You know all about that, right?
Hey, hi-yo. Boy, do I ever.
Chris, I want to talk about chaos in Canada. The next big thing is Alpha Flight.
Alpha Flight, yes.
Apparently, Alpha Flight is getting an 8-part maxi series or mini series, whatever the heck you want to call it, written by Greg Pak,
yep.
Fred Van Lent, and drawn by Dale Eaglesham.
Eaglesham. Okay, first of all, Greg Pak, he was one of the
He did Hulk, World War Hulk.
Yes. Wow, I am shocked.
Yes.
Oh, whoa.
And I enjoyed World War Hulk.
I'm in shock here. Okay,
right.
I'm very impressed that you knew about World War Hulk. Yes, Greg Pak did that, and Dale Eaglesham, he was also one of the artists on JSA.
Yep.
So he's a big fan. I'm a big fan of his, rather. rather. He's not a big fan of mine, but yeah. You never know. Maybe he's a big fan of mine.
Right.
But I'm a big fan of his. I think he does a great, great work. And you know what? I'm really happy that that they're working on Alpha Flight.
Yeah, you know what? As Canadians, I mean, and Fred Van Lint, I believe he did some work on Action Philosophers, I believe, which I liked.
Yeah.
And this is – hey, listen, we're Canadians.
Yep.
This is the Canadian flagship superhero team, you know, on Marvel.
Yeah, I mean, they
Wolverine, Schmoverine. Okay?
Well, yeah,
it's Alpha Flight.
They had Alpha Flight years and years ago. Alpha Flight had a really good run a long time ago.
Yes, they did.
Sadly, it hasn't really picked up any steam lately.
Yeah.
You know, they had Vindicator and Sasquatch and Puck and Snowbird and all these kind of great characters around.
What? You know, I mean, how do you get a better hero in Canada than Puck?
You know, why do you got to do that? You know,
I'm sorry,
trying
but
to promote the comic as being a good comic, and you got to pick Puck as the one to try to promote.
No, I like it. I like the fact that they're bringing Alpha Flight back. I say, as Canadians, we rally. We go out and buy this en masse, and we outsell
absolutely
Superman or something.
Absolutely.
Like that, right?
But you know what? Yeah. Well,
as a patriotic
why did you
act,
have to say Superman. Superman was co-created by a Canadian.
You're right. You're absolutely
so,
right.
You know what?
You're absolutely right.
Go out and buy Alpha Flight instead of Batman.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Buy Alpha Flight instead of Batman. It's connected to the whole Fear Itself, I guess, story arc that's coming out. And you know what? I like it. Alpha Flight, Greg Pak writing, it's going to be good. And on the Canadian note, Chris, I want to end our industry news with the Captain Canuck.
Yes.
Captain Canuck. Richard Comley, the creator of Captain
Richard
Canuck,
Comley,
our
yep
good friend Richard
yep
Comley, who was on the show about a year and a half ago.
We should get him on again.
Yes, we will. Yeah. We will. And he has, I actually emailed him a few days ago, and he emailed me back. He's saying that he's close to a deal for a movie deal for Captain Canuck.
Really?
Yes.
That's fantastic.
I know, and it's very exciting. And he actually emailed me telling me to look, when you go into your movie theater next month, you know, what's that movie magazine called when you go into a movie?
Premiere?
Tribute.
Yeah.
He's saying look for a story in there about Justin Bieber potentially playing
Captain Canuck. That sounds terrible.
I know, but it's great publicity.
Isn't he about 2 feet too short?
I'm sure there's some sort of CGI thing
or
that could work there, but
20
but,
years too short?
No. I think it's all populism, right? I think Justin Bieber. Well, listen, hey, Captain Canuck, Canadian icon, Justin Bieber, a Canadian icon, put them together and you make a new Canadian icon.
Okay, you know, just because, I like fish, I like seafood, and I like muffins. But, you know, seafood and muffins don't necessarily go well together.
Oh.
So, you know what? I'm just saying that I don't know if Justin Bieber and Captain Canuck go well together.
Right. All I know, Chris, and you and I have discussed this before, is that Mr. Comley was on our show. And, you know, literally a few months, a year later, he's getting movie deals.
That's true. That is a very good point. You know what? If you come on Comic Culture, you will get a movie deal.
Right.
Well,
if you come on Comic, Chris is guaranteeing a movie deal if you come on Comic Culture. So, Stan, if you're listening,
I'm not going to guarantee anything. Just saying that right now.
Right.
All right. Well, you know what?
All right, Chris, that's all I have for industry. I think we're out of time, too.
Well, you know what? That is all the time we have for today. If you enjoy the show, if you want to make any comments about our show, you're more than welcome to email us at. What's the email again? I always get it screwed up, so you know what? I should just let you say it rather than me say it.
Comic Culture is produced by Anthony Falcone and engineered by James McIntosh. For comments and suggestions, please visit comicbookdaily.com, click on the podcast link, and leave comments in the comments field.
And remember, I love the smell of comic books in the morning. It smells like victory.
Right. All right, Chris. Well, hey, listen. Support my local comic book store, please.
Oh, hold on. What did you say? Support your local comic book store?
No. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, go out there and support your local comic book store.
You said, my local comic book store.
And support my local comic book store, too.
Shameless plug. You know what? Sometimes I'm ashamed to be near you, but you know what? You're an okay guy once in a while.
All right. Please do go support your local comic book shop, and we'll see everyone next week.
All right. Please go out and support your local comic book retailer and have yourself a wonderful, wonderful day. Take care.